Today, we have a cybercrime bill as an agenda item. So we'll request the our officials to take us through, and then we do the necessary thing. Okay. Mr. Manana and Mr. Robertson. Any one of you can start. You're welcome.
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Chairperson. The bill was placed before the committee today for adoption. We did receive the first bruise, but only late yesterday afternoon. There was no time to make some of the corrections, but most of the corrections on the text is mainly printing errors, and there's a few other corrections that the department wishes to propose. But this is something that will not change the context of any provision in this bill. Okay, the first proposed amendment is in Chapter 3, and that relates to line, or rather the heading Chapter 4. It's page 3. The heading of Chapter 4, we propose that the word "and" be omitted therefrom, a comma be inserted. It's on page 3, under Chapter 4, the heading, it's powers to investigate, comma search, and then there's an "and," access or seize, omit "and," and place in a comma. So it will read powers to investigate, search, access, or seize. On page 5 of the bill, that is in line 42, when the bill was printed, the definition of data was moved up and is placed on the same line as or sentence as Customs Control Act. That must obviously move down. Under and then on page 7 it's subsection 1-2 that deals with the application of the POPIA, and in line 18 at the end of the reference to section 16, we propose that the words "of the Protection of Personal Information Act" be moved under paragraph C, and that a reference to the Protection of Personal Information Act at the end of the sentence be substituted with that act. So it will read, "of the Protection of Personal Information Act 2013, must be dealt with in terms of Chapter 10 of that Act." At the bottom of the page, there was a printing error that is in line 58. The words "a computer system" must be loose standing under paragraph D. On page 12, it's part 4, competent verdicts. It's in line 46. At the end of 4C, this is semicolon. That must be a comma. And then on page 18, the heading under Chapter 4 is then also corrected by the omission of "and," and it's substituted with a comma. There's a print or a setting mistake at the bottom of the page in line 55. The words "to, comma, subject to the direction" must be loose standing on itself under paragraph B of the definition of investigator. on page 26 in line 50, subsection 6, after 42 there's a comma and then an underline that must be omitted. Then on page 32, in line 3, the words as is specified in the request must be a loose standing sentence under paragraph E. In line 23, the sentence reads, communication or traffic data must be obtained or intercepted, semicolon, and. The and must be omitted. In line 29, item 6 must now read, the indirect communications. The S must be inserted after communications to make it plural, which are to be intercepted. In line 35, the and at the bottom of that paragraph must move to be in line with the sub-paragraphs 1 and 2. Then mainly in the schedule to the bill, that's on page 55, where there's a subsection 4 of the proposed section 56A. There's a J that needs to be in italics. Well, that's just the mistakes that we picked up. Like I said, we did receive this proofs 4 o'clock last night. And that's it.
You like to rest? Honorable Rittenbach, Honorable Hahn. So welcome, Honorable Soft.
My apologies, Jay, for being a bit late.
Okay. Honorable Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Acting Chair. I firstly want to raise the an issue regarding the difference in approach to be found, and I'm sorry, I worked here on a previous version of the bill. It was at some stage section 30, where there's an oral application for a warrant. And then we find ourselves in a situation that there's a built into the bill the power by the on the part of the judiciary to then amend or even cancel the warrant that was given after an oral application. But we don't see the same type of scenario in this situation where a search and or preservation, or a search and seizure and or preservation happens without a warrant. So I would just argue that while it may be that that our courts also always have an inherent jurisdiction to deal with searches and seizures and preservations without a warrant, that while we codifying the law in this respect, that it must be included also that power of review, to call it that, where the court even may set aside the warrant in the case of an oral application and direct what should happen with the the evidence so obtained if it's set aside or amend the warrant. So I would just strongly argue that we must have the same type of review powers built into the bill for cases like that. And then the other issue I wanted to raise was only a question.
You are having this, no?
Yes. No, okay. I'm not dealing with that. I'm fine with all of those. This is in addition.
Okay.
And that's in respect of the difference in really the tenses used in respect of the wording in section 29 as it now is, and then on this bill we're having in front of us section 41, where 29 talks about
41.
Yeah, section 29.1a on page 19.
Okay.
Versus section 25, section 41.1 on page 26. And what worries me here is that in the one, the wording used is that it is about being used or is involved in the commission of an offence in order to obtain exercise the warrant, versus then on in section 41, which was used or may be used in. And I just want to argue that maybe the wording should be expanded not to only, in the case of section 29, include the current commission of an offence, because obviously a warrant in many instances deals with an offence that has already been commissioned. So that's the two issues I wanted to raise. Thank you, Madam Acting Chair.
Response before we give to Honourable Breitenbach, please. In that regard. In terms of what he's saying, he made mention of oral application review powers in section 29, 1A and 41, the expansion thereof. Mr. Rovesa and Mr. Mangana.
Thank you, Ms. Chairperson. Regarding the regarding the difference in approach regarding the review of a warrant vis-a-vis in clause 41, where there is expedited preservation of data direction. One must remember that expedited preservation of data direction is relate mainly to certain evidence that's relevant to an offence. There's a reasonable suspicion. And
sorry to interrupt, Madam Acting Chair, but I think I was misunderstood. My first question regarding the review powers really dealt with, there's a built-in review when there's an oral application for a warrant, whilst a search without a warrant, there's no similar type of situation that then is built into the bill there. So there's no built-in power of our courts to review a search without a warrant after the fact.
That relates to clause 32 and 33 of the bill currently in front of you. If you look at the current Criminal Procedure Act, there is no review for a warrant. And in terms of clauses 32 and 33, a police official can only exercise that power, obviously, if a warrant would have been granted to him, but there is other reasons why he cannot apply for that warrant. If you look at clause 32, the provision provides that the police official may perform certain actions in respect of an article, may need to seize the article, but he cannot access the article or perform any other further investigative powers as set out in clause 32 and 33. If you refer to that, I don't think there is a review process in that. And also clause 29, there is no review process. But if you do refer to the other clauses in the bill where there is a possibility of review, that mainly relates to preservation of evidence or expedited preservation of data. Where a police official, obviously on a suspicion, think it's necessary to preserve certain data. Obviously, if a person is entitled to a warrant, a certain standard is met in that under oath or information, rather that information on the oath is a reasonable cause to issue that warrant. In the other clauses you refer to, there is no such reasonable cause unless you refer to clause 42, which deal with the expedited preservation of evidence direction. Clause 44 deals with your disclosure of data direction. It's also relevant there, I think. But yes, the main answer to that is if a person thinks a warrant will be issued to him, it's fine, he can go ahead. And the ordinary process of review that's applicable in South African law will be applicable to that. It's like that in the Criminal Procedure Act, as well as under legislation that deals with search warrants. It's only in certain clauses that we do allow that. And that is where there's mainly a suspicion that and certain things are preserved. How does that answer that? Well, just,
you refer. Why are you shaking your head, Honourable Horn?
Because we don't agree.
No, Madam Acting Chair,
no,
I mean...
Don't shake his head.
Well, then I'm withdrawing the shake of my head.
Yes, you can.
No, you
can't. I will defend his right to shake his head.
Not here.
I'll defend his right to shake his head.
I'm not.
Yeah, no.
Please
no.
Don't shake my head.
Yeah, okay. I think my argument is missed. Section 30 specifically deal with the oral application for a search warrant, and there in subsections 6 and 7, it gives a magistrate or a judge the power to amend or cancel a warrant that was issued on the basis of an oral application. And then subsection 7 specifically say that such a judicial officer may even make an order that he or she deems fit, how any article which is affected by his or her decision is to be dealt with. So the gist of this argument is still that if we deem it fit, and I think that I'm in full agreement with what happens in section 30, because we have to find this balance between the rights of people being affected and the power of the police. If we deem it fit to build in this review power on the basis of an oral application, and then in section 32 we sit with seizure without a warrant, then it can't be that while we're codifying this area of the law and to an extent also amend it, that we say in the case of an oral application there must be some sort of built-in review, but if you act without a warrant, so you didn't even deem it at the time to be prudent for whatever reasons, they may be good cause, I'm not disputing that, that I go ahead without the warrant, that there's no review of that process thereafter.
Well, let me just have an attempt on this. I mean, I don't think it's
Honourable Horn, I don't think it's review you're talking about. That's really the correct term. I think the issue why it is it's basically an ability to amend the warrant, and that's in 30 because the thing was rushed, it was oral. 32, there is no warrant. They've proceeded on the basis that they would get one. Obviously, if the defense want to challenge it, they would then challenge the admissibility of the evidence obtained. I think it would depend on what is in the Criminal Procedure Act, because my understanding is that this is what follows the Criminal Procedure Act as well. But I mean, you can't, the person has acted, the police officer has acted, they've gone in, they've seized on the belief that they complied with the requirements of Clause 32. So there's no review in a sense that can take place. It's a question of challenging that evidence that was taken at the appropriate time. Whereas the why it's there for 30 is because it's before a magistrate or a judge, a judicial officer, because it's oral, it's rushed, they may want to change it. But I mean, how would you want it put in? Just let's ask you that. How would you want this similar provision in 30 and 6 and 7 put into 32, for example?
Well, I mean, you said the word review is not technically the correct one.
Yeah.
One might look into an automatic review. One might look into, Madam Chair, the Deputy Minister referred to, you work on the assumption that you would have obtained a warrant. What then stands in the way of then putting the basis on which you assumed that you would have obtained a warrant in any event before a magistrate or a judge to make a determination as to whether you acted properly? I mean, this is all about preventing abuse, given the fact that we're working with the rights of individuals here.
Just if I can respond, I mean, that's not in the Criminal Procedure Act, so you're going to be changing the law quite substantially. If there's a problem of evidence, let's take a search in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act without a warrant. There's no process of saying, okay, once you've got the stuff, you've got to go back to the magistrate to confirm. Basically, it's an issue of if during the trial, because this is all about evidence, if the defense dispute that those circumstances that give rise allow a search without a warrant were not there, they would then use that to get the evidence kicked out. But what you're proposing is something sort of quite new, and it would be quite onerous, I think, that each time there's a search without a warrant, and if we do this for the cyber crimes bill, we'd have to then do it for the criminal procedure.
I'm sorry, I was shaking my head, but now I'm raising my hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So, no, not necessarily. I mean, we're having this bill specifically to deal with cyber crimes. And I just think we must be very mindful also, Madam Chair, of the situation that this type of seizures may lead to huge scale interruptions, even the prevention of the continuance of businesses. So it's not as simple as just removing some tangible asset from somebody and they can quickly replace it and they keep on carrying on their business. This may lead to the interruption and the prevention of people carrying on businesses if a seizure like this happens without a warrant. So I strongly suggest that in order to balance rights, that we should look into this type of review where there is seizures without a warrant.
Ms. Chairperson, maybe just a quick response in that regard. I think we did provide for a scales clause in clause 36 that the powers to issue a warrant, obviously in mass, can only be issued with regards to the rights, responsibilities and legitimate interests of other persons in proportion to the severity of the offence. I think it's already established in the Helen case that cyber searches and seizures must be carried out with the least possible infringement. I think that's already a precedent in the South African law. So taking into account Section 36 and the case law, I think no ordinary magistrate will give a warrant to, let's say, search or seize or take into possession a communication system of a big service provider. It's always a balanced approach whenever you deal with a warrant.
Yeah, but you're dealing with seizures without the warrant.
That there is also 37, which is similar to 28 in the Criminal Procedure Act of criminalising police who don't behave properly in terms of this chapter. But my concern is that yeah, and there's also the criminalisation under 38 of giving false information with the result that a search warrant is issued. A search is contemplated in section 31 that took place on the basis of such information. So, you know, again, it's following the Criminal Procedure Act. If obviously material is seized and the people feel that it has been incorrectly seized and they want it back, they would be able to approach the court. But to require confirmation that the search was correctly done is would be new in our law, I think.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What would be the harm if you built in a requirement that prior to, if you search and seize without a warrant, because of course that process is open to abuse, and I'm sure that we all can see that will be the way to go. It's too much trouble to get a search warrant, it's too hard, it's too onerous, so you'll automatically say you believed and you'll take. It is open for abuse, and we all know that the Section 37 should be, or which one is it? Strict regard to 36, strict regard to decency and order. Yes, well, for what that's worth. So what would be the harm if you built in a requirement that prior to accessing the material so seized without a warrant, prior to accessing it, the police approach a judge or a magistrate in order to get the warrant? Because then the fear of losing the data and the material is alleviated because you already have it, but that you prevent access until you've got proper authorization.
Sorry, Ms. Breitenbach, you referred to section 30, clause 32.
Yeah.
If you look at clause 32, I think it does spell out that a police official may only access or perform the powers referred in paragraph C and D of the definition of seize in respect of a computer system in accordance with the search warrant. as contemplated in section 29A, that is where you have the authority to gain access, if you look at it.
Yeah, but we're talking about the bits where he doesn't have a search warrant. Yes. We're talking about the next bit, and you know it as well as
but
I do.
Then,
so don't read me that bit, it doesn't
okay.
matter.
And then there's
carry
the
on
clause
having
further
your
provides that only if the police official believes on reasonable grounds that he can access, he may then proceed. So there's an additional onerous burden on the police officials to actually prove that they can access the data.
You're not answering my question. My question is, what would be the harm in building in a provision that requires proper authorization from a judge or a magistrate prior to accessing the material so seized? I'm not interested in what the police believe on reasonable grounds. You and I both know that that's a nebulous provision.
It is actually something that existed in the Criminal Procedure Act. Here we built in additional safeguards, which is, according to us, enough to protect any harm that can be done. Yes, in general, I think the clause is fine.
Okay, so I'm suggesting that we build in a safeguard that prior to the police accessing anything that they've taken in the search warrant in terms of this act, without a search warrant, prior to them accessing that information, they get proper authorization from a judge or a magistrate. I don't see the harm, and that's our suggestion.
Yeah, I just wanted to get clarity from Honorable Breitenbach. If then that should be the case and that built-in is realized, is it, in your opinion, doesn't that going to frustrate the investigation in instances whereby there will be a delay in securing that warrant that is very necessary for this investigation to take place? Wouldn't that frustrate the police in their investigation?
Okay, I don't think that it will frustrate the investigation. In my experience as a prosecutor, it will take a very short space of time to get that authorization from a judge or a magistrate. It can be done on a very urgent basis. It's done in chambers, and you will already have seized the information. So the fear of it being destroyed, removed, hidden, that fear has been alleviated already. You already have it. All we're talking about here is access. So you can't open it, you can't look at it, you can't read it until you get proper authorization. That builds in a safeguard for the person whose stuff has been taken without a warrant. I think we need to balance the rights of South African citizens against the rights of the police to investigate. You've already alleviated the danger of destruction. All I'm asking is that you build in a safeguard before you access it. And I don't believe that that will cause more than a couple of hours, if that much, delay in matters that are urgent.
I am trying, thank you. I'm trying to find out from my colleague, if, for example, you want to take your one, let's say, let's use a computer. Let's say if information, if opened, would lead to more to be seized. What is the policy in that case? Let's say I understand if there is one computer and you seize that one. Let's say you then, if you open it and get access to it, before you go to the court, it will lead you to go and get some more. And then if you go to court, by the time you come back, the others, the man knows that this particular computer has got that information. He's going to take that one away. And yet, if I come into your room and I come in and tackle whatever is there and check and find that this one leads me to more some other places and I confiscate that one. I'm trying to discuss with her as to what would be the harm in wanted to frustrate the investigation.
Can I just ask?
Also, Chair, I mean, it's actually... I mean, to Ms. Breitenbach and Mr. Horn, it's actually 32.2 that we're about, okay? Because 32.1 is about the seizure.
Yeah.
Then 32.2 is about access. So it's a similar clause about access, and again, the requirement, I mean, they only allow, effectively what you would be saying is that you want the proviso deleted.
That's what you're
saying. Because the rest of the thing reads that it they may only access in accordance with a search warrant issued in terms of 29.1A. So it becomes then a question of is there going to be a situation that I mean, particularly the B side, there's urgency and there isn't the time to make written or oral submissions for a search warrant. That's the question. I don't know the answer. I mean, Ms. Breitenbach, you've been a prosecutor. You're saying no. There wouldn't ever be a situation where it's that urgent.
No. That's not what I'm saying. The search and seizure can be urgent.
We're talking about access only.
Because if you just simply quickly repeat. So let's leave one, okay, where everybody's fine with 32.1. 32.2 is access. Mm-hmm. You need a search warrant to be able to access. However, there is the proviso that the police officer may, on reasonable grounds, if they believe they would have got a search warrant and it's not reasonably practical. You're saying, in terms of your experience, that situation wouldn't exist. And I don't know, I'm not a prosecutor, I'm not a police investigator, but effectively what you're calling for is the deletion of the proviso under 32.2,
yes.
That you basically have to get a warrant to access. You
yes.
can't, and so what I'm asking then is from your experience, I mean particularly to Ms. Breitenbach, from your experience, would there never be grounds for such great urgency that you'd want to access without getting a warrant?
Not in my experience, no, and I have some considerable experience in cybercrime prosecutions. If you need that kind of urgent access, it will be, it can take you literally 20 minutes to get it. It is not difficult, there's no hold-up, it can be done on a very, very urgent basis. It's done in chambers. I cannot foresee a situation that could arise where you wouldn't have that 20 minutes to get the required authorization.
Well, this clause took into account Canadian decisions, basically. In that case, I cannot remember specifically the facts. There was a situation demonstrated where there was urgency. And, it was a 5-4 decision that you may access. But
Mr. Roberts, I accept that is probably so. There's a vast difference between how the South African police conduct themselves and how the Canadian police conduct themselves.
Okay, Honourable Sant.
No, Chair, I was going to suggest the deletion of that proviso, which may satisfy concerns and strike the right balance, because remember now we are looking at access, not the seizure, and it's only C and D of the definition of seize. So that is one alternative, and that might then, there must then, it would by implication mean you need to apply for a warrant to obtain access. But the second alternative is to lift the bar. I say not reasonably, but in, you lift the bar and you say in exceptional circumstances, to allow the proviso to apply only where there is, not just reasonable, but we've used it before in legislation, in exceptional circumstances. So that would maybe satisfy the concerns. You still retain the proviso, but you lift the bar there to, not reasonably, but in exceptional circumstances. Although it does say that, it already says existence
yeah.
of exceptional circumstances.
Look.
So it's not, yeah.
Chair, I think let's delete the proviso. Let's delete the proviso.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's not that.
Just in terms of clause 33, sorry, in terms of clause 33 again, we have the clause 33, again we have the issue of access, so with this and the proviso, so 33.3, there's a proviso there, so I mean it's a different situation because this is on arrest of a person, but again the same reasoning I would think applies.
No, look, it's also about access. It's not about the seizure. I mean, what's important is the urgent issue of the seizure, but it would seem that there can be a short wait to get a warrant to actually access the data material.
No, so it can be very
Okay. Are we talking about 33? You also removed the proviso, right?
That's also about, it's a similar provision. It's about, that relates to when the person is arrested, with or without a warrant, and you can seize the data, you can seize the equipment. So 33.2 is the police official may search and perform the powers. But it's a question of then accessing the data that they need to get a warrant on that. And I mean, it's similarly, I don't see any problem with deleting the proviso under 33.3.
So if I understand it correctly, the removal of the proviso would only relate to C and D of the definition of C's under section
25.
Yeah.
Section.
And it's access.
Yeah. You would still have access to data under A and B of the definition of C's in terms of section 25. Remove a computer data storage. Is that correct?
So you'll be able to remove a computer data storage medium, but you cannot access. Cannot access data or obtain a printout of data.
But you see, the proviso only refers to C and D of 25.
Yeah, but C and D is make and retain a copy of the data. D is make and retain a printout of the output of the data. So those are the two issues that you would need a warrant to do. Because it's linked specifically to the word access in both 32.2, a police may only access or perform, well, it's both. It's access, and then it is make a copy, make a printout, and keep them.
Just look at it.
Yeah. Well, access is look at it, and then what's down under CMD is you can't. You can't make a copy, you can't make a printout.
You don't need a copy until you've got authorization.
Yeah. I'm just still. So are you clear, Steve?
No,
sorry.
I'm not. Because what happens? I'm sorry, Jay. What happens if you,
well,
if you want
the
to
of
access? If you want to access under A, so you've got a seizure, you remove a computer data storage. By implication, then, it's not covered because you refer specifically to C and D under the definition of seizure. How do you access the computer that you've seized under A of the definition in terms of section 25? I just want to make sure that we cover that there aren't unintended consequences. And do you understand what I'm saying? If you have a seizure of data under A, section 25A, how do you, and you want to access it, you don't want to make or retain a copy, you just want to access it.
Yes, so that is,
then it,
then you, that is under 32.2, and that you need the warrant for. So you can seize it, take it. If you want to get into it and read it, or you want to copy it and make a print out, that's what you need to worry about.
Okay.
So you can preserve it, but you can't look at it.
No, I'm covered.
Okay, those of you with I think there isn't a problem
there's
with this.
There's a
separation of practices or performance or performance.
Honorable,
sir,
you are not happy.
Let me, I just want an explanation, I think. We shall know. Let's say you have got a computer which is Apple. The policeman sees it from me. Now I get another device which I have. I rub that. Now, while you're going out, going to go to the court and all this, and by the time you have a right to access, you can't even get into it. Now, what I'm trying to say is that if a policeman, if you are trying to find out what is in here, whether you can correct it or you need access in the today's technology. It doesn't allow. I would understand if you're saying while you are on the premises to phone the magistrate and say, hey, there is this thing. Or somebody go and get the warrant. But otherwise, you are likely to lose that. By the time you go to the policeman. I don't see why we cannot trust our policemen more than the Canadians trust theirs. I don't understand that part. I've got a problem with that. I say that today's technology will allow you take this computer. By the time you get into there, the data is gone. Because I think this is a question of an element of surprise. That's important here. You've got to surprise the person and say, while he's being surprised, you check his thing quickly.
I thought maybe this issue of access was in their own.
Look, the issue is, my understanding is, I take your laptop, I'm a policeman, I take your laptop without a warrant. Okay? You can't wipe it out unless you've got the laptop. I've got it. You can't.
You can.
How?
Remotely, I can access it. That's why what they usually do with... Okay, let's take a simple example. A cell phone like this. Police search it. They will probably put it in a holder, a Faraday bag, and seal it. Or put it on flight mode so that nobody can access it. So there's always a possibility that somebody can remotely wipe it. But obviously, during an investigation, and that will also be part of the standing operating procedures, that if something is seized, certain steps and measures will be taken to ensure that nobody can access it from outside. You are correct. You referred to the Canadian decision, which do quote that, but I think access from outside can actually be stopped by a police official.
Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mpuwana, the issue is only with the access. So the seizing of the material, the seizing of the laptop, seizing of the computer, also allows you to secure it. It can be secured. It's not that easy to wipe things remotely, and it can be stopped. And so the seizing and securing of it is taken care of. It's only the access that I have a difficulty with, that you want authorization for. Once you've seized it, you can secure it. A hard drive, a laptop, any kind, a server, all of those things can be secured in such a fashion that nobody can access them. Not you, not me, not the owner, not the police, not anybody without authorization. That's perfectly possible with today's technology. So all you're preventing is the actual access, but you're preserving it from destruction when you seize it. That's entirely possible.
No, I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm saying you take all my computers.
Take all my computers, everything that I have,
yeah.
Except my phone.
Yeah.
Now I go through my phone and I rub off that information. I can with my iPhone.
I
can with my iPhone if you've got my computer there, because they are synchronized.
Of course. But any policeman who doesn't take your phone in such a search and seizure without a warrant deserves to have all the information wiped off.
He doesn't know how many.
How many
phones I have that are synchronized. No, I think it's important.
Yeah, no, it's important. It's a
I think
point.
It's important.
Yeah.
Mr.
Mpo, okay, let me just answer this one question.
My concern is that you are now creating a dialogue, isn't it? You are still on. Let him wait for you then.
Okay. Mr. Mpuwana, I agree with you that it's possible to wipe your laptop with a phone, but when you deny access to the information on the computer, when you secure the computer, it secures it from any access, so you can't access it remotely. It's entirely possible to do that, and any computer expert worth his salt will be able to do it, and so the information will be preserved. Also remember that when you wipe the information on your laptop, it's stored elsewhere, in the cloud, on a server, somewhere else, it's always accessible. So wiping it on your computer is of no use whatsoever.
Yes, all I was saying is that I think the whole idea is a question of surprise. And there can be 4, 5, 6 gadgets that are synchronized, and that if I want you can take it, put it there, and you take everything, but I've got one at home or somewhere, and I use it, I just rub all everything, and you can't go through my iCloud. I think this case of this man who killed his girlfriend, it's what's his name, the one who was a cripple, a runner, Historias. They had problem in accessing his iPhone because they wanted something from, he wanted an access pin from him. What I'm trying to say is that it is, if it's an element of surprise, I don't know why we can't trust our policemen. I just don't understand. I think that, because it's easy for you to run away with this information in today's technology, but the law needs to make sure it must catch up with the technology, otherwise it's not easy to come and change this act later on, because you have discovered that something is, yes, technology has advanced, and that the criminals are able to catch up. I think this is proviso personally. I feel that I don't think there is any harm in keeping it, and I think that this thing of looking for civil liberties more than to cover the so prospective criminals. The idea is to make sure that there is no harm done, and I don't think that, I think we need to trust our policemen, and there is in this particular case. Anyway.
Okay, thank you. I'll move on to a different point, except to say that when you secure a computer, let's assume this is the computer, when you secure it, you build a wall around the computer. Doesn't matter how many times you try to get it from elsewhere, you can't get through the wall around the computer. So I'm happy that if you have the rights of search and seizure and you can secure the information, that it does no harm whatsoever to get authorization before you access it. But let's move on to a different point. I have an issue on section 39, on page 25 of the bill that was handed out today, 39.3. So it reads, a person, investigator, police official, electronic communication service provider, financial institution or employee of an electronic communication service provider or financial institution who contravenes the provisions of subsection 1 is guilty of an offence and is liable upon conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 3 years or both a fine and such imprisonment. There's no requirement for mens rea here. Everywhere else in the bill you refer to unlawfully and intentionally, and here there's no. What is the requirement here for mens rea? Is it negligence? Is it intent? Am I missing something? Or will you put it in? Thank you.
Okay, honourable members.
Then I have another problem, I'm sorry. On section 52. Page 35 of the bill that was handed out today. Six A. Reads, the cabinet minister or cabinet member responsible for policing must, at the end of each financial year, submit a report to the chairperson of the Joint Standing Committee of Intelligence, established by Section 2 of the Intelligence Services Control Act of 1994 on the functions and activities of the designated point of contact. I have a problem with that. It means that having removed all the nefarious tentacles of the state security agency in this bill, this means that all the reporting will be a secret and nobody will ever know what's going on in the criminal justice system with regards to cybercrime, which certainly can't be correct. So I would like that section to read that the cabinet minister responsible for policing must report to the portfolio committee on police with regards to cybercrime, that the necessary cabinet member must report to the portfolio committee of justice, this committee, on cybercrime, and also to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, particularly with regard then to international matters. I can understand that the Joint Standing Committee of Intelligence has an interest in cybercrime, and particularly international matters, but I can't see why those kind of statistics should be kept a secret from the rest of the world. They should certainly be reported to both the Police Committee, Portfolio Committee, and to this Portfolio Committee.
Yes, I just wanted
to
page 35. Page 35.
6A. Starting from chapter 652, 6A. She was proposing some additions.
I'm not she. The
honorable member. There you go.
I beg your pardon.
Yes. You can call me Glynis. You can call me Rachel. You can call me any combination of that that you like.
Okay.
But don't call me she.
Excuse me, can you? I just wanted to find out because
I'll call
her
my mother tongue.
That's fine.
Oh.
Therefore, I don't call you in my mother tongue.
I was trying to find out why did they put it there. Was it not having in mind that there will be something which probably will be better?
Are you still on the same subsection?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay.
I was asking the gentlemen who drafted us in this matter, didn't they have in mind that perhaps there could be some information which has to be kept secret for involving perhaps the secrets of the state or anything like that, that at least the Minister of Intelligence will have to have it rather than it be coming to the public for whatever reason. I mean, why? I mean, I really am worried about this thing of liberalizing everything, that even the top secret of the organization, that of the country, are just given to everybody. I thought that here that we may have some information that is top secret that needs to be at least kept, you know, not necessarily to be exposed to the public. Just, I'm trying to find out, why did you do it? I mean, didn't you have that in mind? If you had that in mind, I think I would have, I would support it.
The leading question.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Usually, international cooperation and criminal matters, I don't think you actually do report it very openly. But look, there's other reason as well. The problem is that international cooperation also relate to the interception of certain communications. And in terms of the recall, there is absolute ban on the provision of any information relating to the interception of any communication. So it's basically from that perspective that this was included. First, the RICO obligation of secrecy, you cannot even provide statistics. And secondly, that international matters in investigation or international criminal investigations is usually not, I can say, published to everybody. So there's basically two reasons. But yes, on the other hand, I think if you look at the international trend and tendency, if it relates to interception of communications, in general, statistics are made available. So on the one hand, that ground do fall away. The only other ground that is probably then to be considered is international cooperation and criminal matters. But my submission is that at least that should have some secrecy attached to that. So I'm comfortable if we extend reporting obligations. As proposed, but usually the portfolio cabinet minister responsible for policing can usually only report to his committee. So let's leave it at portfolio committee of police, and then we'll exclude international matters.
Yeah, but just 2 minutes.
Am I in a follow-up?
That's what I need to make a follow-up.
I says we are dealing with I don't know, I think we're dealing with some kind of permanence in the act here. We are saying that he is saying, because I asked him a question, he is saying that yes, there are things that need to be kept secret. In that case, the reason perhaps for exposing it just for general information to the public, civil liberties, that type of thing. I personally feel that there has to be things that the state must keep secret. And to give it to the intelligence department, where things are discussed by the nation, is fine. When you go to portfolio committee on police and police on justice, you are now telling it to the public. All I'm saying is that really, people, there we need to keep this particular one. I think Mayor Breitenbach, the Honorable Breitenbach, would agree with me on this particular one. I think that one, I stand firm on that one.
Thank you. I'd like to know from Mr. Roberts why he thinks mutual legal assistance matters should be kept secret. They'll all become the subject matter of court proceedings, and it will be conducted in public, and so the public will have access to it in any event. So I can't imagine why South Africa conducting mutual legal assistance exercises with other countries should be a secret, unless you can help me with that. I certainly can't, as I sit here, imagine one that is necessary. And I'm not suggesting that state secrets get published in the portfolio committees, but certainly some reporting measure on what's happening in cybercrime, what kind of attacks are happening, I think South Africans are entitled to know, and I certainly think members of parliament are entitled to know.
No, thanks, Honourable Chair. No, I don't have a problem with, I think, the submission by the Honourable Breitenbach in terms of extending the issue of reporting to the PC on police and also the PC on justice. Because I think that it has to do with the report, statistics and all those things. But obviously it won't include things that are of secret in nature that would require intelligence. I think things that would require the intelligence, that would go to the chairperson of the portfolio committee of intelligence. But other things which has to do with statistics, to say how far have we moved in terms of these, I think that can come to justice, can also go to police. So essentially, I don't think it makes much of a difference. I think we can add that, Honourable Chair. But also, I just want to caution members that we are not dealing with this bill for the first time. I think we are finalising it today, so we must just be cautious so that we don't act as if we are starting afresh. It was also time, I think, is also a challenge. Thanks.
We have been dealing with this matter since 9:30. It's now starting to 11.
Do you want to go to caucus? We don't need to go to caucus, so we want to carry on with our business here today. It's an important business. If you want to go to your caucus, you're welcome.
Can I just raise that the
report is about the functioning and activities of the designated point of contact. So that's all the report is about. It's not about other aspects of the bill, the act. It's just about the designated point of contact, and particularly the number of matters in which assistance was provided and the number of matters in which assistance was received from a foreign state. So, well, the problem is with assistance from a foreign state is that we don't give not every investigation ends up in a prosecution. We receive requests for mutual legal assistance from a foreign state, and we give that. I mean, that's done through the NPA. We don't go and publish exactly what is going on. It still is Parliament. I mean, it's a joint standing committee on intelligence. It's got nothing to do with the intelligence or state security department. It is simply what this 24 point of contact is doing. So I think that some members are confusing other reporting in terms of this act with the activities of the point of contact. And the point of contact body is simply to provide assistance. So I think it is safer if it is, there's a report to Parliament, but it's a report to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, which has some kind of security clearance, and it's multi-party. So I think, Chair, I would suggest we keep it as is.
Okay,
thank you, honorable members and officials. It's true, it's not for the first time that we have been dealing with this bill. And then last week, it said before us, I thought maybe today we're supposed to make a follow-up on the issues which the department, Mr. Roberts and Mr. Manyana raised this morning. But if there are any other issues, like we can't go just by clause now, because last week you said everything must fight. If there is any other clause which you think you want to highlight, let's do so, and then we hand over to we chat a way forward on what we do.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Acting Chair. The other issue I raised, to which there has been no response, was the suggestion that in 29.1a, Roman 2, we must add apart from it reads now being used or is involved in the commission of an offence, may be amended to read being used or is involved or has been used or was involved.
Yeah.
Okay. You responded accordingly.
Yeah,
that's fine. Okay. Any other matter? Thank you, Honourable One. Any other thoughts? You want to highlight?
I'm a bit unclear about what Ms. Reichenbach is saying, because I mean the amendment was the amendment that Mr. Horner's proposed on 29. Do you want to just repeat it so that it can be written down? It's page 19.
It's 19. Just 19. After the word involved, add or has been used or was involved.
Has been used or was involved.
Page 19.
Page 19, 29, 1A, Roman 2.
So it's being used or is involved or has been used or was involved.
Yes.
Okay. The other two changes then are the ones on
32. Oh,
The other two changes are the ones on 32 and 33, which is to remove the proviso under 32.2 and the proviso of under 33.3. So I'm not sure then what Ms. Great... Sorry? And then putting in intent, yeah. So those are the amendments. I'm not sure if why members want to see it again, but I would suggest it gets put to the vote.
Okay, let's have the way forward. Honorable members, any proposal? Honorable DM, can you switch off the mic? Or do you need closer to me, please? Honorable Skosana?
Yeah, no, thanks, Honorable Acting Chair. I propose that this bill be adopted by the committee.
There is a proposal from Honorable Skosana for adoption of the bill with those amendments proposed in terms of those relevant clauses. Any seconder?
Yes, I do.
Switch on your mic.
Yeah.
I support it.
Let's check. Those who are in favor of this, raise your hand. No, I welcome them and they were co-opted. Yeah. Okay, thank you. We have 7-4.
It's like paying for the breakfast and then
yes,
the
and then honorable no, they're making it. Honorable Swart. Honorable Swart, yes.
I just want to abstain. I don't have any objection to the bill, but I just want to consider the last amendment.
Okay. You want? Okay, abstain, Honorable. Honorable Swart. Noted. Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you. We'll take it to our caucus, but it's unlikely that you'll support it if six isn't
okay.
Amended.
Okay. Record 7-4, and then one Honorable Swart abstained, and then on the reasons. He made mention of, thank you, Honorable Sir. And then DA, as normal, we take it up with the caucus. And then, Honorable Members, that was the only item on our agenda. And then, thank you so much. Tomorrow, we are meeting venue next door. We'll be dealing with it's one item, eh? Yeah, one item, and then we'll also, if time permits, we'll also deal with the draft program. Yes. Thank you so much, Honorable Members. Let's meet at 9:30.
It's half past nine. This day. Tomorrow. Let's go. Come to room one. Honorable Breitenbach. Thank you very much, honorable members. No, let's discuss that tomorrow. Yes, let's discuss that tomorrow. Your concern is noted.
Let me finish my
stress.